Okay. Thank you very much. My name is Nathan Wallach. I'm from Stetson University, and I'm going to be talking a little bit about the MPG Care Package, which is a set of networking patches that I've created for MaxMSP to easily share musical data across a network within a laptop ensemble. So I'll be detailing a little bit of kind of about our laptop ensemble, why we've made some of the decisions we've made, and also detailing some of the specific features of it before kind of showcasing and demonstrating between these two computers how I can actually get them talking to each other. So first of all, a little bit about MPG. MPG stands for Mobile Performance Group. We are a laptop ensemble based at Stetson University as part of the digital arts program there. Founded in 2004 by Matt Roberts, who's my colleague on the digital arts faculty. He's a new media artist, does a lot of stuff with GPS technology and those sorts of things. But we had this idea of using laptops in performance for audiovisual, creating events, but doing it in public spaces, confronting uninitiated audiences, getting outside of the concert hall, meeting people out on the street, and kind of bringing this kind of new form of performance, these new technologies of performance, out into the public and encountering new people. So that's a big part of what we do is actually getting out into the public, which certainly informs the style of music and the style of presentation. We've been doing performances since 2004, and we've literally been from coast to coast and up and down the Eastern Seaboard. Most recently, actually in 2 weeks, we're going to be in Indianapolis doing a performance at the Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis campus. It's a long name, but for their intermediate festival of telematic arts that's coming up here in 2 weeks. Some of our guiding aesthetics is actually this concept of psychogeography, the idea that the place can and in our case should inform the actual work of art and how it's created. So one of the things that we actually do is actually when we go to a location, when we go to a new city, is actually go out and collect sounds and images from the place and then use those in live performance, limit ourselves essentially to those materials in live performance. This is very easy with a digital camera, but it's gotten much easier with portable digital audio recording equipment to go out and collect sounds, spend some time organizing those sounds, and then actually use them in performance. The other kind of guiding aesthetic is this idea of mobile presentation. Part of where our name comes from, MPG, is obviously a play on miles per gallon. But we started out performing in automobiles, so we actually use the automobiles as our performance vehicle, using the sound system in the performance vehicles as our sound system, and then using projectors to actually project on the rear windshield of the vehicles as we were moving down through downtown areas and those sorts of things. We'd roll up, we'd stop, we'd open the doors and do a performance, kind of guerrilla style, and close things up. Really kind of inspired by some of the things like organizations like Graffiti Research Labs are doing and kind of getting out in the public and performing. We've since kind of migrated. We've done some things with bicycles as well. Now our main mode of presentation is actually using shopping carts. You can see a picture there basically of loading up the shopping carts, actually using deep cycle marine batteries to power everything. And then we have a sound system that's kind of made of repurposed car stereo parts. That we use then to actually as our sound system doing these kind of mobile performances. A typical MPG performance deals in kind of three phases. The first phase, as I mentioned, is collection. You can see some of our equipment here. These Marantz recorders are great. If you don't have one, I highly recommend them. I'm not paid by Marantz or anything to say that, basically, but we have several of them. We love them. They record the little compact flash cards, and this is becoming more and more prevalent, these type of flash audio recorders. Make it very easy. You don't have to worry about transfer time for the tape that you used to have to worry about with DAT tapes or anything like that. You simply pop it in your computer in a card reader, a flash card reader, and you're good to go. You've got access to all the sound files. So that's usually a day going out and being in the public and dealing with odd questions of what are you doing knocking on that wall with what is that thing that you're attaching to it. And that's actually a good exercise for the students because they're out encountering people that are not used to dealing with technology and art, and having to explain to a layperson what it is they're doing is actually a very good exercise for our students. We're at a exclusively undergraduate program, so a good it's a good part of our learning objectives is getting them to be able to talk about what it is they're doing. The second phase then is actually organization. As you can imagine, you go out for a day collecting and banging on things and shooting a little video with flip cameras and still cameras, images. You have to sit down and organize that material. It comes out with these very unhelpful file names, which you can kind of see over there on the right. You have to kind of go back through maybe your notes as far as where you were recording and find, okay, where was that really deep thud that I like that I might want to use as a kick drum in performance, and actually organize those things, edit them down into small samples that are easily used and easily incorporated in with the performance patches that the students have developed. The phase three is actually getting out and actually performing. So you can see us here with our shopping carts roaming downtown San Jose here on the left. On the right is actually in San Diego when we were out performing. We were actually kind of the pre-concert outside of the concert hall performing as people were kind of gathering for the performance and going inside. San Diego was kind of interesting. The press there kind of latched onto this shopping cart idea and actually labeled us homeless DJs. Which is kind of an interesting take on things. But before those three phases can occur, the first phase, phase zero as I like to call it, is instrument design. This is the responsibility of the students to actually design instruments that will be able to use these sound files in performance, that will be able to generate synthesized timbres using MaxMSP, so they get a really a kind of real-world task of actually creating and building these instruments. That way they will then use in performance. And as you can imagine, there's a fair amount of kind of anticipation that they have to do because this performance cycle is very, very tight, very compressed, 2 or 3 days. So you can imagine there's a lot of kind of advanced preparation and kind of building their instruments for and to gear up for this actual performance style. And that's where the MPG care package comes in, is actually easing some of the difficult bits of actually networking these computers together, getting them to talk to one another, and sharing musical data across the network. So we're using MaxMSP Jitter as our main performance software. You can see a simple example of a synthesizer here on the left, a little more complicated kind of part of my performance patch here on the right. And the students can kind of build. And the nice thing about this is that the students, across multiple performances, revisions, develop and grow their instruments over time. That's really something that I try to encourage my students to do in my computer music classes, is to not just create a single instrument for a single piece, but to create a kind of meta instrument that they can reuse, that has parts that are that can be adjusted and tweaked as multiple performances, multiple pieces kind of grow out of that. Where the MPG care package comes in is there's a set of three kind of parts to this. The first part and the most important part is the Music Links patch. And these patches are all built to actually run inside of the B patcher, which allows you to have little user interface components inside of your own patch with inlets and outlets for making connections. The first section of the Music Links patch is actually what handles the networking. So we are using the NetHole Java class, which is now included inside in MaxMSP. It ships with it. That allows us to quickly broadcast our IP information across the network. And actually, you see where it says my name. The students can type in their name so that we get something a little more, human-friendly than IP addresses kind of listed here. So you know which IP address is which is associated with which person in the ensemble. This actually also handles direct one-to-one messaging. So you can use the name that a person has assigned to themselves to actually send a point-to-point message. So if Megan is set up on the network, I can actually prepend my message with Megan. It will go just to her computer, and it will then pop out at her computer. And this can be used for sending sensor data from one computer to another. We had a situation where our visualist had actually created a touch-sensitive shopping cart now that we use in performance. So the more you touch it, it actually changes the resistance. It uses body capacitance. We were actually able to send that data. They were using it to control their video, but we were able to send the same sensor data over to the music computer so that it controlled a kind of monophonic, melodic line as well as people would touch the shopping cart. And it, basically, as you squeeze the metal harder, it actually would increase the pitch and kind of control a melodic line. So we were able to send that data point to point from the video, from the shopping cart laptop over to the music laptop to control this monophonic synthesizer. That's using open sound control. Then we also have the music parameters, which works in a kind of one-to-many relationship, where the master computer is in charge of dictating musical chains out to the slave computers. Okay, and that's also using open sound control. So that's that first section there. You can, the masters and slave, you have to use the radio buttons there to choose which one you actually want to operate in. You can have multiple masters on the network. There's nothing to prevent you from doing that. The results are usually a little chaotic, so I don't recommend it. But those that are interested in chaos, that you can try that out as well. Then the next section here, the kind of medium purple section, is where you actually get into the pitch information. This is based around the idea of pitch class sets. They're stored as a list that can then be queried on the slave computers. So when I change it to the G Mixolydian scale, that information instantly gets propagated across the network so that all the slave computers will then start to improvise in the G Mixolydian scale. Okay, and I'll show you that in a minute, how that works. There are multiple components to this. Obviously, the tonic is important, the scale, and then also having a chord within the scale. The chord actually operates on the scale set to kind of define things. So you can see there the structure or struct of the scale and the chord. The struct is the struct for the first of the scale, and then the chord struct actually points to scale degrees within the scale. Okay, so that. The 0, 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11 is actually the major scale that you see there, but that 2 and 4 that you see for the chord is actually the second scale degree and the fourth scale degree, not two half steps and four half steps, okay? And you can define which root you want to use as well. So then this information is shared with two little helper patches that are on the slave computers, and that's the get scale mem and the get chord mem. So basically, all the slave computers have to do is actually request specific scale degrees. And then these little sub-patches, these little abstractions, are in charge of kind of monitoring new scale information coming from the network. Okay, and then actually changes it out out from under them so that they are always kind of in sync musically, in terms of the pitch set that we're using at any given time. Okay, just to elaborate on this as far as how this is working, we start at the chromatic scale, and you start numbering things 0 through 11. Okay. The nice thing about this is if you number them 0 through 11, that's also half steps above the tonic, which makes it very easy math-wise in order to do this. So you take your 12 sets and you define your scale. Okay. So in this case, if I'm defining a major scale, I just pick the half steps above tonic that constitute the major scale. Okay. If I then unwrap this clock face, which some of you may be or hopefully familiar with from advanced theory classes that you teach or whatever, this kind of notation is helpful for the students to kind of envision it as a clock face sometimes. But then unwrapping that into a set that gets propagated across the network. Okay, so this is then sent across the network. And I should have mentioned in the music links patch, you can actually tweak this as well. So once there's a bunch of presets that are already in the system, I kind of rip them out of the David Cope Techniques for the Modern Composer, whatever page that is in his book, that he has something like, 40 or 50 scales there, basically. They've all been pre-programmed in that you can kind of use them as presets. But then you can also tweak these. So if you want to add a half tone to the fifth, you can do that as well. You just put in 7.5 and it'll do that as well, okay? You then ask for the second scale degree, or the slave computers then simply ask for the second scale degree. Those little helper patches pop out. Okay, that's four half steps above the tonic. So my tonic is C sharp. I add four half steps, and out pops, one more slide there, the F. Okay. Then if the slave computer then wants to change and ask for the fourth scale degree, well, it just looks that up in the index, finds out that it's seven half steps above tonic, sends that information to wherever the tonic is being stored, and out pops a G sharp. Okay. The nice thing about this is once the slave computers are built to just worry about scale degrees rather than actual pitch class sets, is that the slave computers no longer care when you change the scale. Okay, so the master can be in charge of dictating those changes. So if I want to change the scale out from underneath the slave computers, I just send a message across the network and then ask for the fourth scale degree. And now this time, instead of getting seven half steps above the tonic, I'm going to get six half steps above the tonic, and I get the proper note, okay, just by sending one message across the network. If I want to change out the tonic, I can send that message across the network as well. And now when I ask for a scale degree 2, okay, I get three half steps above the tonic, gets added to the tonic, and out pops my G sharp again. Okay? That makes sense. I know I was talking kind of vague before. Hopefully the kind of illustration here of showing how this changes kind of solidifies how that the pitch information is handled. The second component of the music, or the final component of the Music Links patch here, is the tempo. Okay? And because we're out confronting the public out in the street, we kind of have adopted dance-oriented forms of electronic music because I think it just makes sense when you're out encountering people out where they are. We made a conscientious aesthetic decision to do things that are more beat-oriented. So we have a rhythmic cycle that we've built on the assumption of 4 bars of 4/4 or 64 16th notes. And we have one phase clock that operates across that entire rhythmic cycle. Now, there's no reason the rhythmic cycle couldn't be warped or changed or use a subset of that 64 notes. There's a lot of flexibility here because at the end of the day, all that the phase clock is doing, all the phase clock is just a phaser that's looping over the course of the rhythmic cycle. So there's plenty of bending and changing that can happen with that phaser. If anybody's seen Gregory Taylor's tutorials on LFOs, there's a lot of stuff you can do with low-frequency oscillators in Max nowadays. The one thing that we found convenient is that all the pitch changes that are occurring is to actually defer those to the head of the rhythmic cycle so that as you're making small tweaks within that 4 bars of 4/4, you can be assured that it's going to wait until you've made all the tweaks. You've got basically one rhythmic cycle to make your tweaks, and then it gets propagated across the whole network on beat 0. Okay, so how this works in terms of keeping everything in time across the network. We've tried different approaches to actually keeping things synced across an Ethernet network. If anybody's used MIDI clock works really great because there's not other things going on the network when you're dealing with a MIDI clock. It's a point-to-point clock, and you're using 960 pulses per quarter note to keep everything in line. So when you're using MIDI, basically what you're doing is measuring point by point along whatever the clock is, and then recreating that clock on the other side, on the slave side of things. The problem with this when you translate MIDI clock to the Ethernet is that Ethernet packets are not as evenly timed or as evenly delayed as they are on a MIDI network, where you're assured of a kind of constant data rate. Okay. So when you try to broadcast these 960 pulses per quarter note, they get kind of jumbled, okay? And so when you go to recreate the clock on the slave side, it's out of whack, and you get skips and sputters and all those types of things, and it's not good, okay? So the solution that we've come up with is actually to use an independent slave clock, okay? To have an independent phaser on the slave computer that is kind of keeping time independently, and we then use the Ethernet just to kind of keep things in sync by first dictating tempo changes, okay? So as the master clock is increasing or decreasing, that is then creating subsequent increases and decreases on the slave computer. Now, some of you are kind of, I see some head shakes around the room basically. What's the problem with this? If I start computer A and then start computer B 5 seconds later, the clocks are going to be out of sync. Yes. Okay, good. So what we've come up with is just one simple solution to throw one extra message into the hopper and actually broadcast when beat 0 occurs. Okay? Just by doing this one thing, we're able to keep these computers all in sync with each other across the rhythmic cycle. Okay? So tempo changes and where beat 0 is kind of keeps things in sync. The nice thing about this is when the master computer crashes, okay, the master computer crashes when you're using MIDI clock, all of a sudden the slave computers freak out because the MIDI clock's no longer being broadcast. In this case, because we have an independent slave clock, the master computer crashes, the slaves just happily keep going. They might migrate a little bit in terms of phase sync, but they just kind of wait and keep performing until the master computer boots back up and you send out that beat 0 and everything locks back up again. Okay. So instead of getting one glitch, instead of getting many glitches, you get one little glitch. Okay. Now this combines with the rhythm bank. which is a pattern sequencer that the computers can use to build rhythmic patterns within this rhythmic cycle. We have a field of 64 grids, grid spaces horizontally, and 10 grid spaces vertically here that they can build rhythmic patterns using these little green buttons here that you can click and add kind of entries into the rhythmic pattern, okay? It's very quick to kind of do this with mouse commands, but there's also a set of quick commands, which I'll get to in a minute, that you can see the buttons in kind of magenta over there to the right. And this then generates pulse outputs, or 0 and 1 transitions. So this is kind of a pulse clock that can then act as a trigger. So rather than using bangs, which we found to be a little unreliable in terms of timing, it's gotten better in Max 5, but it was when this was originally being developed in Max 4, the bangs were just, you'd get delays, and depending on how CPU intensive your processing was and your synthesis was, you get all kinds of problems with that. By using a pulse signal, using that for timing information, things were a lot better synchronized. Okay, so 0 and 1 audio signal. Now, looking at a field of 64 grid spaces can get kind of, you can quickly kind of get blurred, basically, at figuring out where the quarter notes are, where the triplets are, that sort of stuff. That's where the ticks come in at the top. Right now it's set for 16 and 4, which makes it really nice for finding 4-4. But these 16 and 4, you'll notice they're number boxes, which means you can change them. You can change them if you want to see the relationship between 7 and 3. It will show you where those ticks are so that you can then fill those into your grid spaces as well. So I encourage the students to get beyond just the feeling of 4-4, to get into more complex rhythmic structures, and to do that with using these ticks at the top to kind of guide their work across these 64 grid spaces. Okay. Now, the quick entry commands are over here in magenta. Okay, and you've got a set of them here. C, which clears a row. R, which randomizes the row. You've got a shift left and a shift right operator. So once you've got a rhythmic pattern in, you can easily shift it over a couple grid spaces or shift it back a couple grid spaces. And then the T's. There's two T's that work with the ticks at the top. When you use the capital T, it automatically takes the ticks at the top and fills all of them in. When you use the lowercase T, it takes a random subset and fills those in. Okay, so it's very easy and very quick to kind of fill in rhythmic patterns with this system. I felt like I'm flying 100 miles per hour here, but I got to speed up because I got to make sure I don't go into the next time here. We've got a matrix control here on the side, so you can actually repatch where these rhythmic patterns are going to the outlets. So if you want to combine pattern A and B and send it to one outlet, you can do that easily through the patching matrix here. It also allows you to switch which rhythmic patterns are feeding which instruments. Over on the end here, we have a destable algorithm. This actually causes patterns to drop in and out. So this is a kind of equivalent to telling the rhythmic pattern, okay, well, you know the pattern, but I don't want you to play all the notes. I want you to kind of drop in and drop out. And so these two numbers in blue kind of allow you to do that. It sets kind of a random probability of staying in and a random probability of staying out once you've pulled out a rhythmic pattern. And that adds some variability to the pattern, so you don't get kind of strict metric timing all the time. Then there's also a rate change at the end, so if you want to drop a row into halftime or drop it, kick it up into double time or play it at 1.65 time, you can do that as well. Okay, so you can kind of create really complex rhythmic patterns with this system. Finally, at the bottom here, we have the repatching mechanism. There's a little L here at the bottom, which highlights a yellow pattern. This is actually using a modified Conway-Life algorithm that will actually repatch that vertical column each time it goes through the rhythmic cycle. And so Conway, if you're familiar with Conway's Game of Life, occasionally all the cells die, occasionally cells are birthed. It's doing that on the column so that you get dynamic repatching going on, which is really nice because in any algorithmic composition system, there's always more buttons than you can pay attention to at any given one time. So having little self-managing repatching systems over here is good for keeping things dynamic. It's also good for when people come up to you, because we're out there performing in the street. People are not shy about coming up to you and asking you, what are you doing, what's going on here, who are you guys, where are you with, that sort of stuff. And so having things that are going to repatch and rework and make the material more dynamic is always a good thing, okay? Before I get to demonstrating this actually between these two computers real quickly, just if you go to my website, I'm actually going to be I've already got the care package posted there. I'll be posting it again with this lecture as well. I launched a Profcast here at the beginning, so to actually record myself reading this at 90 miles an hour. So you can, if I missed anything, you can review it there as well as a podcast. If you want to find out more information about Mobile Performance Group, you can do that at our website, mobileperformancegroup.com. And so then, let me just see if I can. I will escape, and I'll turn mirroring back on. So I just want to show this real quick. I've lost my cursor. There it is. So I'll turn mirroring back on. So I've actually got this set up on these two laptops here. I've got my performance patch here, which I'll get this out of the way, which you can see. And if I turn this on, okay. So, just a little basic rhythm here. You can kind of see things in action. You can see the music links patch up here, and you can see the rhythm bank here. I can, if I pull out this right here, okay, that's my kick drum there. And if I want my kick drum to all of a sudden be in double time, I just change the rate over here. Okay. Very easy operations. If I want to shift, okay, which sounds kind of odd, but okay, so we'll kind of keep things grounded here. If I now switch over to the other computer that I have here, okay, which is this one down at the bottom, okay, so I'm actually controlling if this is working. It's not started.
Start this computer up and say drop something in. Questions about this? Just wanted to kind of quickly demonstrate this. And this scales up to using a hub, and we've used it up to six computers at a time, keeping everything in sync. As you can hear, this is two different computers locked in time. Yeah, you can go ahead.
I can pull this out. Yeah. Any questions? Okay, we can do that.
Well, it'll take me a minute to get. It'll take me a minute to get plugged. So you might as well. If there's like one or two questions.
Let me turn this. Okay.
I can stick around afterwards. I can show if people want to look at two computers kind of connected to one another. I can demonstrate that as well.
No questions. Oh, quite often, yeah. That's kind of what we've done quite a few number of festivals, a lot of art festivals as well. That's kind of Being in a digital arts program where it's integrated and interdisciplinary focus, we're kind of applying both to music festivals and art festivals and performing all over the place, basically. And we've had very generous support, I'd say, from our deans and for supporting travel and that sort of thing. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Paris talk actually in a lot